keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso. Dope, so no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones, bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Thank you all for joining us tonight. I mean, it's been such a, I guess, crazy week. Last week was, you know, so much of that Wall Street stuff going on, the economy and everything. It's on people's minds now. The latest polling that we've been seeing coming out of the early primary states, it's shifting from the terrorism subject back over to the economy, and so you know, it's something that's on everybody's mind, and those that weren't really paying attention to what was going on with the stock market. I mean, the stocks overall last week lost about 6% or so. The Chinese stock market since New Year is down about 15%. Bunch of economic news coming in and out, and so it's just, you know, one of those things that we gotta, you know, keep track of, because, you know, I'm not tied up into the stock market myself personally, but there are a lot of people that are, and a lot of people's livelihoods and a lot of people's paychecks and retirement and all that stuff, people that are pensioners, a lot of them are tied up in Wall Street. I guess it's, you know, it's something that affects everyone, whether directly or indirectly. If you're personally exposed to it or not, it's going to affect you. So that's something to keep an eye on. And the stocks have been on very shaky ground, and so we got to keep an eye on that. And you know, this hilarious meme that we used tonight for the show promos. It says, every time a singer dies, I secretly wish it would have been a politician. And we use John McCain for the image there, and that to me couldn't have been any better of a example of a politician that we wish would just get old and die already. I mean, shit, how old is this guy? He's got to be in his 70s by now. I can't believe he ran for president back in 2008 against Obama, and you know, people kind of questioned that, and people were really tired of Bush at the time and all the wars and stuff, and McCain came in as the warmongering primary challenger to Obama, and it's like, dude, this guy had no chance in winning, but he still went up. But you know, we're coming up now on this the primaries, and they're only a few weeks away. I mean, we're talking about next month the primaries start, and Iowa goes first, the Iowa caucuses, and then you got the New Hampshire primaries, and the race is pretty interesting to say the least. I mean, you got Bernie Sanders up there pretty much running head-to-head with Hillary Clinton, and this is a huge surprise, and no one thought it was going to happen, but a lot of people that thought there were going to be more challengers in the race, at least people with name recognition on the Democratic side, but there isn't. I mean, Bernie Sanders is the only legitimate challenger to Hillary Clinton at this point, and you know, the political establishment, the Democrat establishment has been trying to put Bernie under in the very same way that Trump has been having to battle with the Republican establishment. So it is pretty surprising here that you have Bernie Sanders running head-to-head with Hillary Clinton in the early two primary states. Now, keep in mind, in Iowa, it's a bit different. It's not your average, you know, state where you go out and you just cast your vote, and then, you know, whoever wins the most votes kind of wins it. Iowa is a caucus state, so it's a very different process. People that aren't too familiar with it, I don't even know how it works. It's very complicated, but more or less, there is a popular vote, and then there's the caucuses, and the caucuses is where there's delegates that get chosen in each town or township or whatever you want to call it. There's little districts, and there's like a in-person straw poll, more or less. So people go and they write names on sheets of paper. They throw the sheets of paper into a hat, more or less, and then delegates are chosen. And those delegates are the ones that go to a party convention in Iowa, and then they actually cast the final votes for the candidate of their choice. And so in caucus states, it's a bit more of a taxing process. People have to be very, very politically involved to follow through on a caucus vote. You have to give up a lot of time to go through with it and effort. And you have to go out there and actually make your voice be heard. It's not just like going up to the ballot and casting a vote. It's a little different. So that leads you down to this kind of weird scenario there in Iowa to begin with. And it's weird that it's the first state. But basically it comes down to whoever has the most devoted followers has a really good chance of winning. In fact, in the Republican primary of 2012, Ron Paul actually won Iowa, the first state. He won the caucuses. He didn't win the popular vote, but he won the caucuses. And that was something that went underreported by the media. And I'm worried that the same exact scenario may play out in the case of Bernie Sanders, because there's a good chance that Hillary Clinton does take the popular vote, but it's hard to really make the case for anyone seriously supporting Hillary Clinton. I mean, she doesn't have this really deep, passionate support that Bernie Sanders does. And I'm worried that, you know, he's going to get the media is going to pull a fast one here and say, oh, Hillary won Iowa. And then 3 weeks later when the caucuses, because keep in mind, the caucuses in Iowa, they take a couple weeks to actually fully play out. And so we're not actually going to know who won Iowa for a couple weeks. But I'm worried that the media is going to come out right away and be like, oh, Hillary won Iowa, you know, and that's it. And then a few weeks later, it's like quietly, it's going to be like, oh, Bernie Sanders won the Iowa caucuses. But by then, it's going to be a little late, because then by then, New Hampshire is going to have voted and, you know, a bunch of things are going to play out. Anyway, let me introduce our panel tonight. First off, we have our longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, man? DB, you got your mic muted. Anyway, I'll bring him in once he says something. And we're also joined tonight by Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's going on?
Oh, just hanging in there. I'm really paying close attention to this election stuff, and it's coming down to the wire here in with the primaries, and now the ads are going all over the place. Anyone that turned on a TV in the past week has probably seen the political ads, especially if you're in the early primary states and the early caucus states. But it really is shaping up to be a relatively interesting list here, interesting race. I mean, as I mentioned, you got Bernie Sanders giving Hillary Clinton a run for the money in the first two states, and then you got Trump continuously dominating these polls, both nationally and locally. He's ahead by a couple points in Iowa. He's ahead by double digits in New Hampshire. I mean, it really does look like the Republican electorate is going to vote in favor of Donald Trump.
Well, you know, one issue that really can't be ignored at this point is that in Hillary's infamous emails, there is evidence of war crimes. So if she ends up being, you know, it's, for some reason she actually ends up being prosecuted or, you know, charged or something, then that could throw a big wrench in everything.
Yeah, I mean, Hillary's got a huge rap sheet of horrible things that she's done. And now we're starting to get a little bit of wind of the Libya emails. Claire, I know you briefly looked over those, and you know, that's just, there's just so much baggage there, you know, and it seems like Hillary Clinton is really the John McCain of 2016, you know what I mean? It's kind of like one of those candidates that can't really win because there's just so much baggage there. And in fact, there's even, you know, allegations of like federal crimes. I mean, not only federal crimes of you know, declassifying documents and purposely leaking documents.
Well, and she actually, it seems from the emails that she knew that the Allied supported fighters were actually committing extrajudicial killings on a regular basis. And she knew about that and didn't say anything. Plus, that information came through, you know, the non-secured channel of her personal email. So there's kind of a double whammy there.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be learned from these Hillary emails. And you know, anyone paying close attention to the Hillary Clinton thing doesn't buy into this whole progressive, you know, women's rights type of candidate here. We know that Hillary Clinton is a war hawk. You know, she's a neoconservative war hawk that is progressive on social issues, at least now that it's become popular to be. She hasn't always been an advocate for same-sex marriage. She hasn't always been an advocate for, you know, a lot of these progressive social issues. But now that they've really come around recently, and, you know, the war on drugs, marijuana legalization, things like that, I mean, now it's like, oh, yeah, you know, opposition to the TPP. You know, it's like she blows with the wind. It's like whatever direction the wind is blowing, it's like, yeah, now I support that thing, you know, and this is what Hillary Clinton has become. And I think a lot of people now, thanks to the internet, they kind of have a good grasp on that. I remember on the anti-media we covered a couple months ago when the Black Lives Matter activist confronted her on mass incarceration, and she was really stumped on what to say because she helped create the problem of mass incarceration. And now she's kind of hollowly trying to say that she wants to roll back mass incarceration. It's like, well, you know, we kind of know that you helped cause that. You and your husband helped create that problem. And now it's kind of hard for you to walk back on those comments and those actions and those policy decisions and the lobbying that you've done to create that problem. It's kind of hard to walk it back with a little bit of rhetoric and a few talking points. But that's what she's attempting to do, and she's attempting to ride Bernie Sanders' populist coattails and things like that. But... you know, I don't know. What do you think, Claire? What do you think of this primary, this first in the nation casting of the vote coming up in Iowa? I mean, it shows that Bernie Sanders is head to head with Hillary Clinton. It shows that Trump and Ted Cruz are kind of head to head in Iowa as well. What do you make of it?
Well, first of all, this is not the way I thought that things were going to play out. I just didn't expect Trump to be doing this well, and It's kind of frightening. I'm not sure that it makes much difference who actually ends up in office, but Trump as I would hesitate to even call him a leader. It's kind of like looking forward to having a bigoted fascist in chief. So, you know, and then Hillary is just a war hawk all the way. And you know, people like to say that Bernie isn't, you know, he doesn't push war and he's against war. And then he had anti-war protesters arrested and, you know, he has voted to support Israel and he voted to fund fighting in Iraq. And I mean, they're just kind of all the same. They have different flavors a little bit. They have different tones. They have slightly different, at least public stances on some of the issues. But in reality, it all comes down to the same policy.
Exactly, exactly. And that, you know, that's one of the problems I see with both Trump and Sanders. On one hand, you know, I'm happy to see the Republican establishment squirming and wondering, like, damn, what the hell are we going to do about Trump? And they're pulling out all the stops and trying to take Trump down. And everyone that takes a glove off with Trump gets kind of – they lose their own supporters. And it's kind of strange how that works. I don't know if it's because of his celebrity appeal. I don't know if it's just the Americans' tendency to worship celebrities or what. I don't know what it is exactly. But by all measures, looking back at 2012 as like a historical example in the Republican primary, one bad comment and looking back in history and all the people, I think even like John Kerry got beat one time. He lost the election because he said something negative about people in the military. And I mean, one little comment, one little thing can destroy a whole campaign, right?
Well, yeah, look at Howard Dean when he just, I mean, all he did was make some sort of crazy exclamation that was like a nonsense word, and he was out. That was it for him.
Yeah, what was it again that he did?
He just kind of, I don't know, he just made an exclamation that wasn't even a word, and that was it. He was
like,
done.
He said like, yeah, he just like, he was like celebrating, and he said like some weird stuff, some
yeah.
weird non-words, and that
yeah,
destroyed
it was,
his whole campaign.
But, I mean, that's all it takes.
Yeah, and Trump is able to go up there and just say whatever the hell he wants, and it doesn't hurt him at all. And in fact, it helps his numbers, you know. And it's like, wow, this is a weird phenomena that I've never seen before with any candidate. And I think the Republican establishment is scratching its head trying to figure out, well, what in the world can we do to take this guy down? Because they obviously want to. Because he's not going to grow the party, and that's one of the problems that the Republicans have is it's shrinking quicker than the Democratic Party. Now both parties are shrinking, but the Republicans are shrinking a lot quicker because they're so far behind on the social issues and stuff like that, and so that's why they're suffering so badly. And they're looking at Trump like, damn, this guy is not going to grow the party; he's going to shrink the party. What the Republicans want is a guy like Marco Rubio. That's going to grow the party and expand their base and maybe convince conservative-leaning Latinos to join the Republican Party and things like that. But Trump is like pushing all the minorities out, and you can't deny the fact that America is now at this point the fastest growing population in the United States is Latino. And other minorities, the white population is pretty much come to a standstill. And comparatively speaking, it's shrinking compared to the rest of the demographics. And so the Republicans, the establishment knows that it has to expand into the Hispanic political theater. But Donald Trump is actually shrinking that demographic when it comes to the Republican thing. So
yeah, but you know, the thing is, like, it seems to me that the parties in general, like the party paradigms have shifted dramatically towards the conservative side. So, you know, you have these people who... we're calling them Democrats, but really they're conservatives. And when you look at it that way, there is nobody to really represent the people anymore. I think that's why people are flocking to Bernie Sanders and kind of ignoring his pro-war stance, because they get that whole kind of socialist, the good of the people feeling from him, even though that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, so on the other side of the coin, on the other side of the Donald Trump coin, you got Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is very much a populist candidate. He talks a lot of stuff about Wall Street, income inequality, and that stuff resonates really well with people. And especially now with the downturn on Wall Street, opening up the new year, I think economics, the economy, is going to be the strongest single issue that the people in Iowa, New Hampshire are going to be looking at, because following the Paris attacks and then the San Bernardino attacks, terrorism had briefly spiked again as the most popular issue. But I think the economy has quickly sprung back and it's at the front of people's minds. I think the people in the United States are still struggling with the economy. The economy has not rebounded the way that they had liked under Obama's management and George Bush's management. And people are really looking for answers there. And that may be one of the reasons why Trump has such a strong support base, is because he comes off as this businessman that's knows how to make create jobs and that kind of thing. And on the other side of the coin, you got the Bernie Sanders factor, which is like, dude, like, you know, blame Wall Street, blame the rich for the problems of the country. And I think in many respects, I mean, Bernie Sanders is right. The rich have pillaged the economy. They all got bailed out in 2008, while the average homeowner got kind of left to their own devices, and many people lost their homes and went underwater on their mortgages, and all that stuff happened. And so there's the Bernie Sanders factor, and I think this economy, this Wall Street downturn that we've seen since the new year, may give Bernie Sanders the upper hand when it comes to Iowa and New Hampshire. And so this is going to be a thorn in the side of the Democratic Party as well. And so overall, you know, I look at people like Donald Trump as a negative, and Bernie Sanders, I see him as a negative as well, because he's pretty much status quo. He votes, I think it's like over 90% of the time he votes in line with the Democrats. While in his stint in the Senate, in Congress, he votes with the Democrats like 90% of the time. So overall, he's pretty much status quo. But his rhetoric is very anti-Wall Street, anti-rich, class warfare, that kind of thing. And I think that's a legitimate critique. You know, I think class warfare is a legitimate issue to be discussing right now, because I think that you know, the economy is being raided by the rich in many ways. So, you know, but Bernie Sanders at the same time is going to be a problem for the Democratic establishment, because he is too extreme. And the Democratic establishment, as you said, Claire, is very conservative now when it comes to many things, including mostly foreign policy. I mean, they're pretty much in line with the neoconservatives, you know, soft warfare, regime change, the war on terror, drone war, you know, all the stuff that Bush more or less started, Obama has continued and has increased. So, you know, the Democrats are worried about their funding, their corporate backers and stuff. And I think Bernie Sanders kind of scares away a lot of their backing.
You know, I wonder though, if what Bernie Sanders used to his advantage by running as a Democrat as opposed to an independent, which he claimed he was, I wonder if that's almost like the wrong choice in a way, because if he was running as an independent, then he would be able to kind of have his own stance and not necessarily have to be along the party line. Even though he normally votes along the party line, at least he wouldn't be so obligated to it. I think that might end up being part of his downfall. He's not able to have that kind of independent status to have policy as he chooses. I don't know. I mean, a growing number of people in the country, actually a majority of the people in the country, now call themselves independents. So it just seems like maybe that was the wrong move, possibly.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And, you know, I wanted to talk about that a bit, because I think we're covering that tomorrow. Regarding this new poll that came out that found that people that identify as Republican and as Democrat are coming up on like all-time lows, pretty much.
Yeah.
And the people that identify as independent are reaching all-time highs. And, you know, this is a very huge part of this dynamic that we have in the United States. Now, everyone knows that we have a quote-unquote two-party system, And it's like, well, you're either Republican or you're Democrat. There's no in between. And the media, man, the media, the mainstream media reinforces this to the max. I mean, it's Democrat or Republican. There's no in between. You know what I mean? And this is the kind of this is the kind of talking points that we see coming out of the mainstream media. And there's no mincing words here. I mean, the media plays into the political establishment like no other. I mean, they create this. You know, this political establishment that we have here, the two-party system, and other countries in you know, places in Europe and all around the world. I mean, they've got dozens and dozens of political parties. Even in England, they've got a bunch more than we have here. They've got at least three parties that are major players. But here, it's like you're either Republican or Democrat. I mean, how many actually self-identified independents are there in Congress? Like five at the most? Out of over 500, I mean, it's crazy. But at the same time, now we're starting to see that we have like 40% of the country that self-identifies as a political independent. Where is the representation?
That's kind of my point. I mean, it seems like you almost wonder if Sanders had run as an independent, would he have perhaps received more support than he is now? I mean, he's getting a lot of support, obviously, but I wonder if that would have been to his advantage.
There, you know, there's a possibility, but maybe, Claire, like, I'm going to ask you this question, but I don't expect you to be as naive as the average voter. but who are the independent candidates right now?
Well, it's the Green Party, the Libertarian Party. I mean, there aren't many.
Okay, so you got Jill Stein, you know, you got Jill Stein on the green, on the left, and you got Gary Johnson as the Libertarian on the right.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask the average person out there on the street, I mean, shit, half of them probably wouldn't even know who the Republican and Democrat, you know, candidates were. Let alone know probably who the independent candidates are. You know what I'm saying?
They probably don't even know what the third parties are. They probably don't even know, like, the names of the third parties or what they stand for or anything else. They probably don't even see that as an option. I mean, how could they? Because the media is so flooded and saturated with Republican versus Democrat, and that's it. That's, like, the only option.
Exactly. And so that's the problem. I think that, you know, Bernie Sanders has been an independent in the Senate for years and years and years. But if he were to declare his presidency as an independent, well, he would have no media coverage at all. No one would even know about him. You know, and I think he, you know, Bernie Sanders, I don't know if he's actually planning, if he actually thinks he's going to win or not. I don't know if he's playing that whole Ron Paul card where it's like, hey, it's just about the message. I know I don't have a shot. You know, I'm not the big money's not backing me. The political establishment can't stand me, but I'm trying to push a message out here of democratic socialism, and I want people to pick it up and carry it on once I'm done. You know, I don't know if that's what his goal is and all that, but you know, if he were to run outside of the two-party system, he would not. No one would know who he is. Now he's got pretty decent name recognition, and he's actually, you know, running head-to-head with Hillary Clinton in Iowa and New Hampshire. I mean, this is a pretty big feat for a guy that's anti-establishment, you know. And by all means, I'm not a Bernie Sanders supporter. In fact, I've been one of his harshest critics. But, you know, he does carry a message that is a thorn in the side of the Democratic political establishment, and that to me is admirable. But in the end, of course, in the long shot that a guy like Bernie Sanders or a guy like Donald Trump were to become elected, there's that problem of the fact that they've got to deal with the machine that's existing.
Exactly. Which is a shame. I mean, that's the whole problem. This is why the system is rigged. There is no way for us to bring in a third party in any effective way until the system itself changes. I mean, it's set up so much as a duopoly, and that's it. Nobody else has a chance. I mean, Bernie Sanders is, you know, technically he really is an independent. He has very independent, you know, political stances. So having to force his hand and run as a Democrat, you know, you were saying you wonder if it's just the message that he's trying to send. I actually think he's very serious about wanting the presidency, and I think that's why he stepped outside the bounds of what, you know, he's necessarily really comfortable with and is running as a Democrat instead of running as an independent. I mean, it shows like an actual seriousness to what he's doing.
It's a good point. You know, and by all means, I wish him luck. I'm not a Bernie Sanders supporter, but I hope he gives the Democratic establishment a real run for their money, and I hope Trump does the same. Now, the problem with Trump is that his rhetoric is very incendiary, and it stirred up a bunch of hate and a bunch of racism in the United States. And you got attacks on Muslims near all-time highs, I would say, more now than any time since 9/11. And that's a real danger. I mean, you got recent polling showing that there's recent polling on religious freedom. And when asked about the people that were polled, when asked about Christianity, there was a very high number of Americans that said, yeah, people should be free to, you know, practice Christianity however they like practicing it, you know. But when they asked the same question about Muslims, well, then the number of support went way down, and people were asked, well, do you support Muslims' right to practice their religion? And the numbers of people that said yes was like really low, and it was really frightening, actually, especially considering the United States is a country that was more or less founded upon this idea of religious liberty. But we've kind of evolved into this idea of, well, white Christian religion is, you know, perfectly fine and acceptable, but anything outside of those boundaries, even Mormon, you know, we should restrict that freedom and not let them practice how they'd want to practice. And of course, you know, Mormonism and all that has its own set of detractors, and you know, they're known in some extreme factions for polygamy and things like that. But you know, this is, you know, the United States really is a country founded on religious liberties and things like that. And for people in this country to say, well, yeah, we think that some religions are worthy of having free speech and others aren't, well, then that's when you start getting into this really gray area and this really twisted ideology of exceptionalism and thinking that some religions are better than others. I mean, they're all believing in some made-up dude in the sky that supposedly created the earth in 7 days. I mean, all these Abrahamic religions believe the same thing. You know, and it's kind of funny that some say, well, our guy in the sky is more legitimate than your guy in the sky, and that's kind of a funny way of looking at it, but, I mean, that's just kind of down to the basics of it.
Look at how dangerous what Trump is kind of offering as belief system is, really, in this country. I mean, the other day at a Trump rally, a Muslim woman stood up and just, she had a shirt on that said, I am Muslim, I come in peace, basically. And she was kicked out. And not only was she kicked out of the rally just for standing up and not saying a word and wearing this T-shirt, but people were screaming at her as she left the stadium. I mean, what kind of message is that to not only the country and people in general and compassion, but the world and tolerance and freedom and everything else? I mean, that is just terrifying to me.
You know, on the bright side, that's a message that people that fall into those ideologies act like that. So that's the bright side, of course, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, and we're joined now on the call by another one of our awesome team members on the Anti-Media, Cassius Methel. What's up, Cassius?
What's up, man? How you doing?
So, you know, I wanted to comment on that event that happened with the Muslim woman, because the hilarious thing about Trump supporters is that they pride themselves in being this politically incorrect bunch, right? We don't believe in political correctness. You know, we're gonna call a transvestite by what they are, and we're gonna say that Bruce Jenner's a man. And, you know, I mean, this is what these Trump supporters, you know, a lot of them subscribe by. It's like political correctness out the window. You know what I'm saying? But the thing that we gotta remember about political correctness is that it's always in context, right? So when you're at a Trump rally, it's politically incorrect to be a Muslim at a Trump rally. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, they pride themselves on political incorrectness and like, oh, you sissies got to stop being so, you know, so sensitive about people talking, saying racist things and saying stuff about Muslims and saying stuff about, you know, people that are gay or whatever. And they pride themselves on this anti-political correctness stuff. But then when you put it in context at a Trump rally and you got a Muslim woman that stands up and doesn't even say anything, well, that political correctness, incorrectness is something that is intolerable. You know, it's like you can't be politically incorrect at a Trump rally and be Muslim there. You know, you can be politically incorrect and say, yeah, Muslims go to hell. And it's like, yeah, that's we're going to cheer that kind of shit on, even though it's politically incorrect. But
well, if you think about it, like all the Trump supporters seems to just be about hurt feelings. I mean, they're like, well, what about us, you know, white people? We're, you know, we have the bum deal. It's like, are you serious? You know, I mean, it doesn't even make any sense if you actually stand back and look at what it is that they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, good point, Nick. Like, it's a real hypocrisy in the political correctness thing when they turn around and do that. And, yeah, I think that it's incredibly good that this type of ideology is so blatantly not what you want to do. Like, this is a lesson for everybody that wanted to think these type of things before now. Look how ridiculous it actually looks, you know?
Yeah, man, it's laying it bare, dude. I mean, it's a hypocritical ideology. You know, they don't like political incorrectness. But my last three bans on Facebook came from Trump supporters who felt that the stuff that I was posting was politically incorrect according to their worldviews, you know. And so I've caught another one today on my two main accounts. This comes basically 2 months straight now that I'm unable to post on Facebook, and I don't want to jump to conclusions and just say I'm being censored. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, I am being censored by Facebook Corporation. It's not by a government, but you know, people that support Trump are hypocrites. They're probably some of the least intelligent supporters out there. We had this meme over the weekend go viral. It was pretty hilarious about the lotto. and it was like something like saying that, like, if the lotto were split between all 300 million Americans, that we'd each get like 4.3 million bucks each. And it was just like the dumbest thing. And I see everybody, bunch of my libertarian friends and my right wing friends are like, this is Bernie Sanders math and all this kind of stuff. The funny thing is that actually the scientific data that is available, according to the intelligence quotient of people that support each candidate, actually shows that Bernie Sanders wields the most intelligent supporters, and Donald Trump actually has the dumbest people supporting him. And so that's pretty funny too, to see that comparison and the whole left-right thing get invoked once again over the dumbest little Facebook hoax. And unfortunately, your libertarian people, the conservative ones especially, I saw it come out from the Libertarian Republic, which is Austin Peterson's quote-unquote news outlet, basically say that, oh, this is liberal math, and this is how liberals think about math. And it's like, dude, I mean, okay, it's funny, but unfortunately the truth of the matter is that Donald Trump has the dumbest supporters out there according to the scientific data that's available. Bernie Sanders actually does have intelligent supporters, and unfortunately they are buying into the you know, the Bernie Sanders bunch of promises being made that aren't going to be able to be kept. And this is the kind of thing that Obama was very famous for, and of course he's not followed through on the majority of his promises, and in many ways he's gone to the opposite direction of many of the promises that he made. But Trump, I mean, is the same thing. He's making a bunch of promises, and this whole "I'm going to make America great again" thing is just the most hilarious promise out of them all. I really don't know what period in time he's talking about as far as making America great. I don't know if it's the 80 90% of the time that America's been at war since its inception, or what point? I don't know, the Vietnam War, maybe the post-World War, Cold War. I mean, what point in time is he talking about making it great again? I mean, this country has been plagued in moral battlegrounds since its inception. I mean, slavery, conquest, genocide of Native Americans. I mean, you name it. I mean, the country's been pretty much screwed from day one. I mean, yeah, there are some things that you could look at economically, empire-wise. Yeah, we've got a great big empire and stuff like that. But never, I don't know if I could say that the country has been great at anything morally speaking. They've done.
No, it might be more believable of a slogan if it was "Make America Great for Once."
That's a good one. There you go. Let's rebrand Trump's campaign for him. Let's make America great for once by banning Muslims, kicking Mexicans out of the country, and building a giant wall. And that's how we're going to make America great for once, without addressing the underlying issues of inequality, racism, fractional reserve, fiat banking, and all that stuff. Let's make, you know, let's not talk about all that, but we're going to make America great for once by building a giant Great Wall of China. God, it's hilarious. Anyway, let's move on here, because there's so much to talk about. This election is looming. I guess we're all going to get a taste for what it's going to be. Last little caveat here on the election is that the funny thing about primary elections, and I guess you could say the same about general elections too, considering the Electoral College and all that stuff, is that the actual votes don't really count. When it comes down to it, it comes down when in the primaries, it comes down to the delegates. Now, we talked about this with Iowa, and Iowa is a caucus state. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to what's called the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention, it comes down to delegates and superdelegates. And according to reports, Hillary Clinton has already tied up a bunch of the superdelegates, meaning that even if Bernie Sanders were to carry the popular vote in the primary election, which is pretty unlikely just on its own, but even if he did, the superdelegates are already kind of in Hillary Clinton's corner. She paid her dues. The democratic process is somewhat of a farce here in the United States. And so the delegates are the ones that actually choose who becomes the candidate for presidency. And same with the Republican Party. When the establishment decides that they don't think Trump is palatable, at the Republican National Convention, they can pull a quick one and kind of have the delegates choose who gets to be the candidate. And it may not be the guy that won the most votes during the primary, which is likely to be Trump. And if they really don't want Trump, well, then Trump is not going to be the nominee. And all those things are going to have ramifications of their own. I think that I honestly hope that's what happens, because then I think that people will actually come to grips of this idea that, shit, maybe the elections aren't what they seem. Maybe they aren't so democratic after all. Maybe the power brokers of the party and the corporate backers that control them are actually the ones that choose who the people are that get elected. And that's probably what's going to end up happening if the scenario occurs that Donald Trump gets the popular vote for the Republicans and Bernie Sanders gets the popular vote for the Democrats. We're going to see more or less a corporate coup over the electoral system in the United States. It's been going on for a long time already, but we're going to actually be able to see it play out with our, you know, in plain sight for the first time. And so that's going to be a very interesting dynamic that we see play out as all these states continue to vote. Iowa, again, Trump leads the poll. Bernie Sanders is pretty much head-to-head with Hillary Clinton, and he's got the more loyal support base, so he's probably going to win the Iowa caucus. The media may try to screw him. That's probably what's going to happen. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic as this thing plays out, and the U.S. electoral system, I think, this election season is going to face the most scrutiny it's ever had, because of the scenario that we see playing out. And it's going to be one for the record books, and we'll see what the ramifications are coming into you know, later on this year and in the 2017, and we're going to see what happens. I mean, I think we're going to see a much bigger upheaval than we saw with the whole Bush-Gore scandal in Florida last time around. I think there's going to be something much bigger than that, but, you know, we're going to have to wait and find out. But that brings me up to our next point here, which is an article that Claire wrote, and it has to do with the military-industrial complex, or more accurately speaking, the American war machine, which more or less controls both parties. We know Hillary Clinton is a neoconservative on foreign policy. We know that as much stuff that Bernie Sanders talks, he has pretty much been in line with the Democratic establishment on foreign policy. He voted to fund the Iraq war. He has been pretty much status quo on most empire related votes and stuff like that. But Claire, you got a great article up today on the anti-media about the war machine and about how they actually profit from terrorism, people dying, and how they actually more or less enjoy the fact that people are dying by from terrorism and stuff like that. And then I want to talk to you about that and also about their grips over the electoral system, because, you know, there's no denying that, especially when it comes to the Republican establishment, I mean, it blatantly in the pocket of the defense establishment. And then the Democrats are pretty much openly war hawkish with Hillary Clinton. And I think that's one of the reasons why they aren't so friendly to Bernie Sanders, is because his rhetoric is not very war friendly, even though his votes mostly are. The way he talks isn't. And so that's damaging to their own propaganda and things like that. And these guys spend millions and millions of dollars on propaganda and stuff. They don't want some guy like Bernie Sanders or even some guy like Trump coming along and saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't have overthrown Libya. Maybe we shouldn't have overthrown Gaddafi. Maybe we shouldn't have overthrown the government of Iraq and stuff like that. And so they don't want these voices being heard at all. But Claire, first let's talk a little bit about this article here. And it's an op-ed on the anti-media. The title is "The American War Machine Finally Stopped Pretending to Care About Your Safety." And there's a couple quotes in here, and these have been accumulating over the last few months. And there was a great leaked conversation on The Intercept a while back that talked about how these defense contractors kind of celebrate when there's terrorist attacks and things like that. Claire, what can you tell us about this?
Well, the article is kind of based on an investor's report, like an investor's forecast report for the defense industry mostly. And they talk about how it's basically they're cheering how wonderful it is that after the downturn in defense spending because of the Budget Control Act in 2011, there is now an upturn because of increasing terrorism around the world. I mean, they even say that for defense contractors, this represents an opportunity to sell more equipment and military weapon systems. It's like, yay, let's celebrate the fact that everybody is being killed. They're saying they hope to have basically Congress people in their pocket to thwart the Budget Control Act in order to push a stronger and larger defense budget, which is already, in fact, increasing in size. And they anticipate that there will be increased demand for weapon systems and, you know, they call them defense, but I really hesitate to use that word, defense systems for the military industry to start making profit again. So basically they're congratulating themselves for being, for pushing war and for the fact that terrorism is now a thing that they can capitalize on. This is like, you know, they call it economic opportunism. I would say that it's more like profit opportunism. I mean, this is, oh boy, we can make profit off of everybody else's pain. And they're saying
it's war
like
profiteering.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, they're saying how bad it was that there was a downturn in the defense budget for the U.S. But, you know, the U.S. budget in 2014 was more than China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, France, the U.K., India, and Germany combined. I mean, what is it that we're missing here? You know, I mean, this is just ridiculous. And if there's any more, if you need any more evidence that the cogs in the wheel play together, then you look at the military lobbyists who have gotten the candidates to basically push the war effort, just push any war possible to make sure the profit comes in. I mean, it's like all the pieces are here. This is why politics, you know, is irrelevant. It's a moot point.
Yeah, and you got Hillary Clinton over here wanting a no-fly zone in Syria, which is basically saying, hey, let's just bomb out the entire Syrian Air Force and let's conduct regime change in a country, a sovereign country in the Middle East that has been historically one of the most secular anywhere in the region. And, you know, let's just go ahead and do that. And that's what Hillary Clinton wants to do. You know,
exactly.
And you got Bernie Sanders on the other side saying, hey, let's just back Saudi Arabia and help them do what they're going to do over there. And then you got the guys in the Republican wanting to carpet bomb the entire area and turn the whole desert into glass. I mean, there's no win in this situation. There's nobody else. There's no one out there challenging that idea except for maybe Rand Paul. And he's not even going to be included in the next Republican debate. And so that his ideas are out the window. And so, you know, the war machine is winning this debate. They're winning the 2016 election. Doesn't matter who actually gets elected. The war machine wins, right?
That's what it looks like to me every single time. This is, people ask me, you know, why I'm not voting. This is why I'm not voting, because it does not matter. There's so much money backing these candidates and, you know, these lobbying firms that just pour money into these campaigns after Citizens United. We don't have a choice. There's no choice in our vote, as if, you know, the Electoral College weren't enough. I mean, this money, this military backing of all these candidates proves that there is no choice in candidates for the people.
Should I play the audio from that last debate real quick? You guys got it. All right, you guys.
It's 9 minutes of aggravation.
It's only a minute and 31 seconds. Come on, let's hear it. I think the Trump one is the best. ISIS. I mean, seriously, man, like, these guys are like, just it literally is strictly war propaganda in these debates. You know,
it is. I mean, think about this. Nobody is offering even the scantest, like, hint at a solution at peace anymore or anything about freedom. That's just not even part of the pretend.
It's not in the vocabulary anymore.
No, peace was uttered four times on that whole debate. Freedom was mentioned four times. Two of those times were in the USA Freedom Act, which is, you know, nothing about freedom whatsoever.
It's about surveillance. Hey,
exactly.
We're going to protect your freedom by surveilling every single one of you guys.
I got a story. Silicon Valley is meeting with the state, or I think they met last weekend, but Facebook, Microsoft, Twitter, all these tech lords met with the state to, quote, disrupt radicalization, I think, this weekend. So I'm trying to write something about that.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's a concerted effort going on here, not only to push propaganda, but to silence critics and to silence dissent. And in the past, they've been so much more open about silencing dissenters. Now it's not such a big deal. They just have to push out a couple distractions out there to put the public mind frame.
it's kind of a tactic of overwhelming with other stuff. It's like overwhelm everybody with, you know, so much war profiteering propaganda and everything else, and then all of the dissent will be silenced. And any dissent that gets through will be silenced by peers who are buying into these tactics.
I mean,
was that dress blue and black or gold and white or...
Exactly, man. Over the weekend, you got the whole Powerball thing. You got David Bowie dying. Monday, you got the Golden Globes, or Sunday, you got the Golden Globes happening. Today, you got the college championship. Over the weekend, you got the NFL playoff games. I mean, it's just overwhelming the amount of distractionary things going on. And I don't want to down talk anyone watching the damn college game right now. Hopefully you're watching the game and listening to the radio show tonight simultaneously. But there's no denying the amount of distractions out there that we have to have us not talk about the real issues going on. And even when we do, it's like, oh, well, Trump said this and Trump said that and this, that, and the other. It's like, dude, but come on, man. Like, Trump is not going to do the shit he says. And in the end, the only thing he's doing is stirring up a bunch of hate and racism throughout the country that's been laying in wait for who knows how long, but it's there. And that's really the role he's playing, is stirring up a bunch of incendiary ideas and remarks and boneheaded thoughts on immigration and things like that that aren't well thought out and aren't economically sound and things like that. You know, and Trump's not an idiot. Trump's a smart guy. And a lot of his rhetoric is not economically sound. His anti-immigration rhetoric is bad for the economy. Banning Muslims from the country would make us lose out in billions in dollars in tourist revenues and things like that over the very, very, very slim chances that an Islamic tourist is going to come to this country and conduct an act of terrorism, which is pretty much less like 58 times less likely than being killed by a cop, you know. And how many people go out in the morning and go outside and think, you know, I might get killed by a cop today? And as small as a chance that is, and probably most people don't even think that, you're still 58 times more likely to be killed by a cop than a terrorist. So, you know, chances are very, 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 very slim to be killed by a terrorist. But yet that's what, you know, Trump is kind of cornerstoned his campaign on and stuff like that. And like I said, he's not an idiot. He knows the stats. He knows that the stuff that he's saying is not economically sound, but yet that's what people are buying into at this point in time. And so, you know, it's just, it's all part of this theater, you know, and it's all distractionary stuff. Anyone you run into in the streets that talk about the threat of Muslims and stuff, well, unfortunately, the propaganda won with them. They were beaten by the propaganda, and it won. And they're
divide and conquer.
Yeah, and they're kind of happy too, and they like that they've fallen into that trap because it's comforting. It's comforting to sit there and think, like, you know what, this country's in a bad shape. My job sucks. My mortgage is more than what my house is worth. And then to sit there and say, you know what, the reason why all this is happening is because of Muslims and Mexicans. That's really comforting, because then you don't have to think about the real reasons why this shit's so messed up, is that your government is taking advantage of you. All the corporate institutions have kind of taken over the political system. You know, that's pretty, you know, that's pretty discomforting, in my opinion. It's like, damn, dude, the government is corrupt. All these banking, you know, Wall Street and shit is taking over the government. That's pretty, you know, scary. But to sit there and say, yeah, Muslims, they're the problem. I don't even see Muslims on a daily basis, but shit, they're the problem. You know what I mean? It's really easy. It's really easy to fall into that trap, and that's exactly why Trump is gaining so much support. It's not because what he's saying is, like, real or, like, what many of us support. Well, he's just speaking the hard truths out there, you know, he's saying what needs to be said. No, dude, he's not saying what needs to be said. He's distracting you fuckers from the real problem. You know what I'm saying? And that's the problem out there, dude. And so, you know, that's the show tonight. Thank you all for tuning in. Make sure you catch us Wednesday. I promise you, We're going to have some awesome guests Wednesday, some awesome callers. Make sure you go on YouTube, UCYTV, catch our past show. Catch us 5 days a week here on UCYTV.
Through the stereo. Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo.